The White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Your host, Carolyn Yeager.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I am Carolyn Yeager, and I welcome you to my Saturday afternoon program on this November 10th, 2012. There's some strange noise in my ear, which somebody has to do something about. I don't know what it is. Our phone number is 1-830-443-4911. This is not a toll-free number, but you are welcome to call in, but not until the second hour. I won't take any calls in the first hour, and you can also email questions in to carolyn@carolynyeager.com. Today's show is going to be fascinating because I have John DeNugent with me. Most people know John. He's been in this movement, if we can call it that, through all the changes and ups and downs for 34 years. He is controversial. Even though, in so many ways, he speaks several languages and can talk intelligently about anything, it seems. His current website is www.democraticrepublicans.us. That's actually Democratic-Republicans, or short hyphen, Democratic-Republicans.us, and also his another website at www.johndenugent, all one word, johndenugent.org. Well, hello, John, and welcome.
Hello, Carolyn. Thank you for having me on your show.
You know, there's a strange sound coming through my earphones that is quite irritating to me. I don't know. It started at some point after we had talked for quite a while, and 5 minutes or so before the show started. Is it a fan or something?
No, there's no fan at my end. I warned you the J team might possibly be involved here because they tend to sabotage a lot of my radio shows. I did one with Brendan O'Connell, who's now serving 3 years in prison in Australia for hate speech, and they interrupted the show every 3 minutes. No, not at all. No. No fans are on. My speakers are off. I just have my headset on.
Wow.
Nothing has changed at my end.
That's really weird. Because
welcome to my world.
Well, maybe the listeners don't hear it. You know, sometimes I hear things because my hearing with these headphones is very acute and sometimes it doesn't come across.
Now, we could hang up and reconnect the call.
I don't want to do that because that might be kind of a problem. Because yeah. So the call was fine, you know.
Yeah, I cannot hear you very clearly. Your voice is very quiet.
You know why? Gosh, thank you very much. You know what I did? I had turned my mic all the way down. And here again, I started the show without. I should never do that, really. Remember it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn, and I'm sorry that I had my mic turned way almost, I actually had it turned off, but I guess you could hear something. And I'm talking here with John DeNugent, and we were discussing some background noise that we have. We'll just have to ignore it. So I will repeat his website. Maybe we should just start all over.
Yeah.
And,
I could say it. Actually, johndenugent.com. Democratic-republicans.us is my clone, my mirror website, because johndenugent.com gets hacked so much. But basically, johndenugent.com is my white nationalist blog. It's very extensive. It's been going on for years. And johndenugent.org is for the organization, the Eternal Solution Agency, and that is, it's toned down for the masses and for the general public. People who sort of Tea Party leanings, anti-Obama, they don't know much about race or the Jews and things like that. So johndenugent.org, and that's full of videos, all designed for the public. I have a a video editor. I've been paying him $300 a week. I do professional quality videos, and I'm pleased with the content too. So I have two, johnnugent.com and johnnugent.org.
All right. Yes. And they're both very interesting, and I've been reading on them the last day or so, and well, longer than that, actually. But
well, you know, I am a man of few words, Carolyn.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, as I said in my little intro that that nobody probably heard very well, that you seem to be able to talk about intelligently about anything, and that's always been the case with you. I enjoy talking with you very much. Now, what
well,
we
know,
want to talk
about. I'm just an Irish American politician, you know. It was my father, not I, but he was hung upside down by his ankles over in Ireland to kiss the Blarney Stone at Castle Blarney. You know, they hang you, it's 200 feet drop to the ground. They hold you by your ankles. You kiss that stone hanging upside down with a 200-foot fall beneath you, and you have the gift of gab. So this is then passed on down to me, you see. So, as I say, I'm a man of few words.
All right. Well, I'm I'm pretty good at talking a lot myself, so we'll see if we can take turns here, and I'll try not to talk over you. I get a little flustered with this noise, and then with my mistake with my opening, so I have to kind of pull myself together here again. But you know, when we decided on this program, we were going to have James Damon, or I thought I would have James Damon on, and the two of you together, and we were going to talk about German Americans, because James has had a very interesting experiences recently with his German American Heritage Society in Texas, and I wanted to talk about that. And since he couldn't come on the show, I still want to go into that, because you have done so much good work with German Americans. You know, before we go into some other things, and I wanted to give the experience that he had, and this is a part of our overall theme, which is you know, white Americans and whether white Americans can stand up for being white and for the racial realities that we're facing right now, or whether they can't. And we've seen German Americans be so beat down during the first and second World War that they are unwilling to stand up for anything German, and in this country, and even in Europe and in their own country. And this is happening now to whites, and I think it will continue to happen. I think we will continue to be beat at, you know, and whether we can stand up to it, and whether the Germans can possibly come back into their own and help us out, because as you pointed out, a large percentage of white Americans have a German ancestry, or have some decent, you know, pretty good part of German ancestry.
Yeah, actually, there's a gal named, first name is Susie. She was a lady cop with an excellent career in Columbus,
Ohio.
Yeah,
I know Susie.
Yeah, she's wonderful. And she and her sister. And she lost her career because in her own free time she said something politically incorrect. And so she was tossed out, despite a scintillating career as a female cop in Columbus. But she and I were talking once, and in fact, I had her on one of my radio shows a couple years ago, and I made some remark about her being Italian. She says, "John, I'm only half Italian." She says, "The other half is German." He says, "John, everybody in the Midwest is half German." He says, "My mom was German." He says, "That's what makes the Midwest what it is the Germans." And I thought, wow, that's an interesting comment. But I live in western Pennsylvania, and it's certainly true. I would say 3/4 of the white people in Pennsylvania, and this has been 85% white state, and very Tea Party, very right-wing, guns, can't stand Obama. Obama only carried the black-dominated cities in Pennsylvania. All the suburbs, all the countryside, he lost everything. The whole map is against him. Very.
Well, why did he carry the state then, John?
Because
a lot of whites voted for him.
Jews, college students, people who couldn't stand Romney. There's a lot of things to object to in Mitt Romney. Blacks, and we are getting Hispanics coming in. He carried Pittsburgh for the reasons I listed. He carried Erie, which is heavily black. He carried Harrisburg, the capital of Pennsylvania, which is in bankruptcy, heavily black. So everybody's on the dole. York, which used to be the capital of the Pennsylvania Dutch, it's now full of blacks and Mexicans. Philadelphia, which is full of all kinds of stuff.
That's...
And he carried Allentown, which is full of Puerto Ricans. So he carried...
Well, sure. So, but that's... But
he
that
carried the non-white
is
areas.
What we have. That's what we have growing. We have. Well, we're going to get to that. We have that growing, you know, our population changes that are increasing, which is a real threat to us. But so while I'm still on this, let me just go on with James' experience, and then we can move on to other things. Because he taught there. He's in Austin, and there's I visited him there. And there's a German Texan Heritage Society there. And he taught German there. You know, he knows German. He translates, does a lot of great translation work from the German into English. And he taught there for 10 years as voluntary, never got paid, teaching the people, anybody who wanted to come there in these classes to learn German. And then what happened to him was that, let's see, let me get into this. Several weeks ago, he wrote, and this was just, he just wrote this recently, the treasurer of the German Texas Heritage Society there, who is a retired accountant, telephoned and asked him to come to headquarters in their building, which is a heritage in itself, 160-year-old building there. And, you know, not only teaching there, but James was really always very good member of that Texas Heritage Association, did a lot of work there, always participated a lot. And anyway, he found this treasurer agitated and downright antsy, and this treasurer of the organization said to him, "What in the world have you been translating?" And James rattled off the names of these German dissidents whose names are familiar to everyone, you know, like Horst Mahler. And so, you know, some of the things he's been translating over the years, in the recent years. So he doesn't hide that or anything. Of course, he's got his name on it. And he said that these are things that people who are interested in German current events should want to know about. And this man had never heard of any of them. And he says, James says, like most members of the German Texas Heritage Society, he never bothered to learn German, like me, and has no interest in German history, politics, or culture. What are they doing about, you know, past or present? He says, alas, this is generally true of German Texans. Although a number of accomplished individuals lend their names to it, another prominent member of the of this Heritage Society recently explained to him that her ancestors came to Texas to get away from all the cultural stuff, not bring it with them.
Well, you know,
but then
Hans Schmidt used to say, you know, you have this beer and bratwurst Kultur, you know, culture, and then you have the German Hochkultur, the high culture of Beethoven and Brahms and the philosophy and everything. Germany is rich on every level, delicious food, beer. If you're into cars and autobahns, castles, they got that. But by God, there's a stupendous parallel universe of German thought and culture. And too many of these German clubs just have no sense of the true sublime heritage of Germany.
And this scares them, too. So anyway, this obviously this accountant was asked to call James in and talk to him and give him the bad news, because he then went on to ask him whether he was a friend of a notorious neo-Nazi Holocaust denier named Frederick Toben, and whether he had been interviewed by a notorious neo-Nazi named Carolyn Yeager on a notorious neo-Nazi radio program. Well, I did have James on my program. It was hard to get him on. He's so kind of reluctant, and I think he was reluctant today too. But he was on that program, and so, you know, he knows who this came from. This didn't come just from the the Texas Germans who don't know what's going on. But James says that this fellow said he himself had never heard of Frederick or of me, but he was outraged by all the notoriety. He even asked me if I denied Holocaust, to which I could only reply, how can anyone deny Holocaust, the greatest swindle of all time? James is very clever.
Oh, yeah. So
what happened here was that then he was told that that they no longer wanted him to be teaching at the society.
To protect the children.
Something like that. Anyway, a little bit more here. He says that they were on the he was on a Yahoo discussion that the German Texas Historical Society had a Yahoo discussion group, and someone complained that that Traudl Junge, Hitler's secretary, said nice things about Hitler and depicted him as kind and generous.
And he
said on the discussion group, well, why shouldn't she think so? He was the perfect boss. He chose her over all other applicants shortly after she arrived in Berlin, since she came from Munich, and he liked her accent and some more things about her. And the woman who brought that up announced that she was personally affronted by his remarks, and he replied that she was the one who had a problem. Well, then, you know, they got that shut down. He said the Jewish Defamation League is what he calls it, rather than the Anti-Defamation League, and Defense League officially joined in the complaint and took it to the state level, where the German Texas Heritage Society chairperson, a lady I don't know, promptly killed our discussion group. Next, the Dell Computer Corporation, Texas-based, joined in the fray, and our website, this discussion group, was mysteriously sabotaged, kind of like this terrible noise I'm hearing. Of course, there could be no possible connection. There were additional threats. I don't know what they were, but they must have been drastic. And so James Damon was banished, the only one who can speak German and really knows about German history and so on. He was banished from the German free school. And this is kind of drastic, because 10 years he'd been there. And this is why? Because Jews came along and made a big stink over it. Why else would all of this have taken place, you know?
Yeah.
And
well,
go ahead.
Well, I've done a lot of thinking about this. Basically, the Jews view themselves explicitly as a race of geniuses. We are the people of Moses and Freud and Karl Marx and Albert Einstein and, you know, all these great geniuses. When they look at the Germans, they see a people, their great rival, as a people of genius. I mean, many other white peoples have done amazing things. I mean, you think Leonardo da Vinci and Michelangelo with the Italians, or, you know, Marconi and radio. Americans have done so many incredible inventions. But for a relatively small country, the Germans have just created incredible things. And it bothers the Jews, because they say, we are the people of geniuses. I mean, you look at the Germans, and I'll include a little bit Americans of German ancestry, second or third generation Germans. Germans invented the car. America will have the car, the diesel truck, the contact lens, aspirin, the jet, the rocket, the computer, the television set, the X-ray machine, the interstate superhighway, otherwise known as the Autobahn, the rifle, hot dog, beer, coleslaw, ketchup, you know, even the modern Fritz helmet that our Marines and Army troops wear. And you think of names like Kraft Foods, Merck Chemicals, Schick Razor Blades, Westinghouse Electric, Chrysler Cars, Anheuser-Busch, biggest beer brewer in the world, Coors, which is originally, by the way, Carolyn, was called Adolf Coors Company.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And right. Nestle, which is Swiss-German, Oscar Mayer, you know, wieners and hot dogs, Meineken Mufflers, Eddie Bauer Sports Clothing, Bausch & Lomb Telescopes, Bayer Aspirin. Boeing is a huge corporation. Boeing Aerospace, Boeing 747, Kroger Supermarkets, the Derringer Pistols, Sturm and Ruger Rifles. We've all heard of the Doppler effect in radar. The Fender, the famous Stratocaster electric guitar, Gerber Baby Food, Hershey Chocolate, Kaiser Aluminum, Mosler and Diebold Safes, Mack Trucks, Maytag Appliances, Stouffer Foods, Reese's Pieces. I mean, just not only to mention the stuff straight from Germany, Volkswagen, Mercedes, BMW, and Audi. And the number one pistol that American cops use, 70% market share, is the Glock from German-speaking Austria. And, of course, the energy drink, which I don't approve of, but the kids are all guzzling it, is this Red Bull energy drink, too. So, I mean, Germans and people of German ancestry, it's something in the genes, some mystical something. But if when the Jews look at the Germans, they see a people with an incredible level of genius. Here's another interesting thing, and I'm not making this up. I happen to know a lot about German genius. I majored in German at Georgetown, although I'm just 1/16th German. Although my
I know it's amazing that you are such a you're such a good proponent of Germans and Germany and everything German. And I was surprised to find out you were only 1/16th German.
Well, here's an interesting point, because I have some Irish and British stock in me, and Scottish and whatnot, and the name de Nugent is actually Norman.
French.
Yeah, Norman French, but they're Vikings who learned French, conquered Normandy, and then got bored after 150 years of peace, said, who can we conquer next? Says, oh, England, there's no claimant to the throne, so they did the Norman conquest and conquered England, and then they got bored after 100 years of peace there, and then they conquered Ireland and Scotland and Wales, and so they're basically Norwegians who learned French, and then they conquered Sicily, and they went off and invaded Russia and Constantinople, and they were just your average friendly Viking. But yeah, the name is technically French, but in any case, the Germans have such, and I see German features and faces here in Pennsylvania. They're sort of like a rectangular face, strong jaw, strong cheekbones. They're serious. I find that many times people of German ancestry, even if it was only their great-grandfather who was from Germany, they take work seriously. They take their promises seriously. They tend to be punctual. Their home and their lawn, neat as a pin, boy. That's the religion here in Pennsylvania and a lot of the Midwest. A perfect lawn, perfect gardens, everything clipped, everything swept. And again, maybe nobody in their family spoke German for 100 years, because the last big wave of German immigration was before World War I. That's 100 years ago. But it's something in the genes of people of German ancestry that they realize life is not a game. To be happy, you must be a responsible adult. And happiness is not guzzling beer and talking about football. Happiness is, I live my life with honor. My friends can trust my word. When I say something, I'm going to do it. I have an orderly life. I have a successful career. And I'm proud of, through hard work, becoming who I am today. That's really German.
Yeah. Okay, well, one thing I think that the Jews are trying to do with Germans in Germany is to make the Jews German, to constantly talk about German Jews and try to kind of turn everything in Germany to be about Jews and less about Germans, and make themselves superior to those who we know are German or kind of take them over and make them over in their own image or something, or put themselves in the middle of it. For example, here, one thing that this German Texan Heritage Society has just decided to do, they had a special thing on November 4th featuring this book written by an awesome Olga Bornstein Wise and her husband David. They translated this, you know, something about Olga's great-grandmother, a Jewish girlhood in Berlin. And they're making a big deal out of this, you see. And they will, and they'll all go there, and, oh, the Jews. And but if they'll make more over that out of this feeling that they need to show how they've overcome anything that's left over from the Third Reich, that they have nothing to do with that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was a member of the GWA for a while, and on their discussion group, and the people there are just unable to deal with this at all. You can't even bring it up, and they tell you not to, or they'll kick you out. I finally did get kicked off of there.
Yeah.
Because
I'll have to say this. Germans are not an individualistic people. Germans love being part of a group. That's why the Germans are such incredible soldiers. I mean, there's no such I mean, James Bond, yeah, he takes down a few individual bad guys, but to win a war, soldiers have to all wear the same uniform, do the same thing, and follow orders. Germans are not individualists. You can't expect a lot of individualism or stepping out of line from Germans. Their strength is concerted, united effort together. And when you look at how the Germans rebuilt after World War II, it was far more devastated than the South after the so-called Civil War, the war between the states, or some would call it the wall of Yankee aggression, like my friend Sam Dixon. But within 10 years, a country that looked like the landscape of the moon, 80% of German cities were destroyed. Mm-hmm. Or the German cities were 80% destroyed, is more technically accurate.
Yeah,
putting
right.
It. I mean, they're
right.
Just flat. It's like atomic bombs had gone off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at some of these pictures. And by the way, in June of 1945, the U.S. Army Air Force flew over Germany and took hundreds of thousands of pictures just to see, you know, how effective their bombing was.
Yeah, right, right.
It was incredible. And if you believe the Austrian German historian and friend of mine, Gerd Honzig, who just did 5 years in prison over in Austria, he says the true figure of the number of Germans killed in World War II was 16 million.
Yeah, I saw you had that on your website writing. I'd like to have a number that I could really trust, because I know they're always too low.
I think it's accurate. Konrad Adenauer, the first chancellor of post-war occupied Germany, said once in German, "There are 5 million Germans who are unaccounted for. They've just disappeared from the planet." And he threw his hands up in the air like, this is outrageous. There's no accounting for them, but they're not in Poland, they're not in East Germany, and they're not in West Germany. They're just gone.
Well, this is a terrible, terrible loss to the white race. Now, I want to pick up on what you said, which I think really takes us into what we want to talk about, and that's that Germans, you said, are not a particularly individualistic people, that their great gift and strength is in the way they can work together and use a combined effort. And that's what we need right now in this country. We're talking about the German ancestry, the German stock amongst Americans. We need the ability to do that. We need to overcome this individualistic qualities, which are good but are not working for us at right now. And so we would need those Germans. How do we fit all that together? Because you know, they're pretty much lost to us because of the brainwash, because of the indoctrination they've been through, and their fear of standing up for themselves.
Well, you know, I would go back to what Socrates was told when he visited the famous Oracle of Delphi in Greece, and he asked, "What is the secret to wisdom?" And the Pythia, the priestess, sat over this crevice with this divine steam coming up and inspired her. And she said, "Gnosisse auton," which means know yourself. And I think white people will save themselves by first knowing themselves. There's two things we got to know about ourselves. And they certainly apply to the Germans as one of the part of the pinnacle of the white race. First thing is, the word Aryan means noble. Noble means you feel responsibility for everybody. You feel even a need to be a hero when called upon, even to sacrifice yourself. You're idealistic. The word Aryan means, it doesn't mean blonde hair and blue eyes. The word Aryan means noble. The second thing is, and I had an assistant about 4 years ago named Henna Kalapa from Finland, and I was telling him, you know, here's an interesting point, because he comes from one of the blondest, most blue-eyed countries in the world. Finland and Sweden are tied for the most Nordic physical appearance. And I said, you know, in German, the word blue-eyed has the secondary meaning of naive. And he said to me, yeah, it's the same way in Finnish, John. And
that's good.
You spent 8 months in my house. And you heard his voice every day. And but you know what? The Dutch have the same secondary meaning for the word blue-eyed, naive. And the Swedes and the Norwegians and the Faroe Islands and Iceland, all these Northern European countries where 50% of the people are blue-eyed, It's well-known fact, and I've seen this in Der Spiegel, which is the big German news magazine. It's the equivalent of Time magazine in the United States, or Newsweek. And they'll use the word blauäugig, blue-eyed, and it's always in the meaning of naive. So we are so noble as a people. You know, the poor blacks, oh, God, 150 years ago, great-great-great-great-grandpappy or his relative down south, or actually only 3% of Southerners, but they had some slaves. And so I feel so responsible. I mean, you know, it's just ludicrous. I mean, in fact, I've got a whole video about the fact in the 1860 census, it was a very detailed census just before the Civil War broke out. Only 5% of Southerners owned slaves and less than 1% of Northerners. And most white Americans living today descend from people who came to America after that. Italians and Poles and Czechs and Greeks and Lithuanians and Germans. The big waves of the so-called white ethnics came after the Civil War. So the overwhelming majority of white people in the United States do not descend from anybody who ever had slaves. And yet we feel so responsible. Yeah. This is a beautiful thing about our race. I'm not putting down our people. I'm saying the Jew understands this can be turned into a weakness. We feel responsible and compassionate toward everybody who whines and complains and manipulates. And by the way, I talk a lot about psychopaths in my blog and how dangerous they are. Ted Bundy, who did horrific things to 35 women, and usually very pretty women too. He killed 35, mostly pretty or even beautiful white women. Horrible fiend. One of the number one ways that he would reel women in, he'd get some crutches, and he'd hob around down the sidewalk on crutches and kind of fumble for doors and stuff like that. And then some cute girl would come over, you know, women with all their compassion and want to help. And he'd lure them in, get them into a conversation. So what psychopaths do is they play the pity party.
Okay, we know that, John. I don't want to. But, you know, let's not get off on the psychopaths right now because we're going to get off topic. And the fact is that we don't need to be, you know, we don't need psychopaths to take advantage of our naivety and our noble feelings and so on. So I think this is very good that you point out that that Germans are not the individualists, but the true Nordics are more the individualists, right? Maybe we should put the Mediterraneans in charge of our movements, and the rest of us should follow because we're good at following.
No, it's interesting because I live in Apollo, Pennsylvania, and just up the Kiski River, we have two towns with a lot of Italians, Vandergrift, which is a steel and aluminum town, and further up, actually it's on the Allegheny side of the river, is New Kensington, Alco Aluminum, big factory towns, or they were until federal trade policy shut down a lot of our factories and our mills. But everybody remembers the good old days of the mafia. They really do. Both Italian Americans and others have told me, boy, the Italians wouldn't take any guff from the blacks.
Okay. Sometimes you get real low, John. I don't know what it is if you're moving away from your microphone. Maybe you need to turn it up a little.
Okay. How is it now? Is it better?
Well, just now it was better. It kind of comes and goes.
Oh, or they may be messing with us.
Well, I think it's just your voice level.
I haven't moved anything. My voice is always booming, and my mouthpiece is just where it was a minute ago. Nothing is.
You know, I would like to ask the listeners, someone to send me an email at CarolynYeager.com to tell us if you hear this kind of noise in the background, like some fan with a card in it or something, you know, with a playing card stuck in it or something is running. Or if I just hear this, because, you know, when I take my earphones off, I think, oh, somebody outside is making this noise. No, it's not outside. It's not here. It's only in our conversation.
Kind of a fluttering sound.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's more like a. It's noisier than, it's different than a flutter, but I just want somebody to, you don't hear it, huh?
No, I don't.
You don't hear it. Why do I hear it? I don't get that. So I would like to have, I don't want to interrupt our show, but if anybody hears any, send me an email if you hear something or if you don't hear anything. I hope they don't hear it.
You just think all the stress on Skype. You have MI5 and MI6 in England listening in. You have the Mossad, the National Security Agency, the FBI, the CIA.
Well, maybe they are listening in to you. I've never had this on my shows, and I don't imagine that they're listening to me, but they might be listening to you, John, because I know you've been.
I'm just a simple country boy. I'm a man of few words. Just what's happened to me in the last few months is the government shut down my Woodforest bank account. They closed my PayPal, confiscating $228. They deleted the Wikipedia article on me. They've started stealing and opening my mail. I get envelopes slid open that are delivered to me with the cash taken out. Other envelopes come with the money still in it, but delivered 5 weeks late. Letters from the same person, one sent 2 months ago, another sent 2 days ago, and they both arrive at the same time. Tires are slashed in my video editor's car. I think it's very clear, and you can see this if you look at johnnewton.org, my toned-down videos for the masses. What the enemy fears is the economy will tank at the same time an impressive white leader will arise. And they were able to hold Hitler down all throughout the 1920s. In 1928, before the Great Depression, the Wall Street and American money was actually bailing out the Weimar Republic. The economy was going along semi-okay. Hitler finally ran a full list of candidates all across Germany in March of 1928. He was brokenhearted because Hitler, yes, the great Hitler, the great speaker, the great orator, the war hero, he got 2.6% of the vote. And he sat down and he wrote a book called The Second Book, which he then finally decided not to publish. It was found in a safe at the end of World War II.
You know, John, you so fast into other things that I can't talk about what I was wanting to talk about. I don't know when you're going to, where you're going to end up or how long. Well, I don't, you can finish that. Yeah. Finish this point.
And it was only the Great Depression that woke the Germans up. But we're heading now into a tremendous time of possible racial and economic catastrophe. And this will wake white people. They want to make sure there's no white leader. Complainers are okay, because you can then say, see, we still have freedom of speech. You can criticize the government. You can criticize other races. You can be a bigot as you want. But when a leader comes along, don't want a leader.
Okay. All right. I understand what you're saying. Well, you may be very right. I want to point out that, many people tend to not believe you when you say these things, because because it's not happening to them.
Well, let me tell you,
things like this don't happen to me, but I realize why they wouldn't be bothering with me. So,
I would definitely never say this if it weren't true, because once I felt duty bound to announce on my blog three different times, the government is stealing your donations that you sent to me, then they all dried up. Of course they dried up. Nobody's going to send you any more money if Obama's going to pocket it or his minions. It was a catastrophe for me. First them stealing it, and then the final sentence of death to my donations by mail was when I announced it, because I had people sending me $500 in cash from France or $200 in Swiss francs, as if from Switzerland, and people sending me, I got $100 in Australian dollars. It's usually a little plastic window in the middle of their dollar bill. It's very curious. And I've got all kinds of currency in cash from white people around the world. No return address, because they're living in countries with hate speech laws. They want to get on the government's blacklist, so they were sending me stuff anonymously. And I was getting it for years. And it all suddenly ended in July. So I would not make this up.
This past July? Year?
Yes. When we basically completed the new mass appeal website, johnnewton.org, and we released the first two parts of my 7-part presidential launch video. And then for 10 days, I got no mail at all.
How many people do you have working with you, John?
Well, I have people around the world working with me. I have three people.
Well, but I mean where you live. Are you still in the same house?
I'm in a new house
in
Apollo, Pennsylvania, right on the beautiful Kiske River. Last house on the left, just before a gorgeous bike trail. Used to be a railway, and it's part of a Rails to Trails program. And it's just right after me is a gorgeous forest, and children and dogs and families walking up and down the bike path, and a sparkling Kiske River and a ridge of mountains. It's just a wonderful area, and I'm looking for more volunteers to come and help me here now.
Well, does that work out? So how many volunteers do you have, or do you want to say? I mean, do you have a fair amount or just a few?
I have three here now. I have a video editor, who's a rough, tough guy, and German ancestry, by the way, from Ohio. And I have a former Army MP, military police, 6'2", 240 pounds, big, tough guy, Irish and Italian ancestry. And he had military police trainings, and we have a 7,000-pound GMC Suburban to transport me around in. We have a full video capacity. We have a $1,500 Sony prosumer camcorder to do professional quality videos. We have a $1,600 iMac to do video work. We have high-speed DVD duplication. We have high-speed LaserJet printers. We have a real headquarters here. What's happening right now is I'm going door-to-door with my flyers, and there's a total media blackout because I have two perfect issues. The big issues here locally are, as well as nationwide, but especially locally, the pedophile Jerry Sandusky and the Penn State, you know, football scandal involving the molestation of kids. This is a huge thing here locally because, you know, a lot of Pennsylvanians used to be so proud of Penn State. And everybody said to me, I saw people foaming at the mouth when they saw Jerry Sandusky on TV a year ago. And everybody said to me, this is just the tip of the iceberg. How did this guy get away with it for 13 years? And I have proven on my flyers, he got away with it for 40 years. Because in 1971, a woman from here in Apollo, whose grandson runs a wonderful restaurant here locally, she told me that her oldest son, Warren, was studying engineering at Penn. It's a great university, great, huge state university, right in the center of the state, in the woods, actually, in the farmland.
Yeah.
He was studying engineering, and right off campus, there was an ice cream parlor. In the old days, you know, ice cream parlors are sort of jerks, and, you know, you get an ice cream sundae, and it's kind of still quaint back in the early 70s. And there were all kinds of different sundaes you could order, banana splits and parfaits. And one of them, it was two balls of white ice of vanilla ice cream and a banana down the middle, and it was called the Sandusky Sundae, and that was in 1971.
Okay, well, yeah, well, we know these people; they get away with it for years and years, and that's the real thing we need to pay attention to is that they're protected. It's all covered up, and it's institutionalized. It's been going on for who knows how long, and what they do is they. When something comes out, they can't cover it anymore. They put the guy on trial. They make out he's just one person. Or they'll say, oh, there's more, but, you know, everybody forgets about it. They send him to jail. And just like they're doing with that Saville, who's, of course, he's dead now. But, you know, they'll make a big noise about him, but they will never continue to go after it. You know, I have to say, John, I got three replies. And thankfully, the listeners are not hearing this noise, and you don't hear it. Only I hear it. And it's not coming from around me, because when I take my earphones off, it's totally quiet. So it's very strange. this one person said your voice does vary a bit in volume. So
speaking of you, Carolyn?
No, you.
Your voice is
varying. It's a little bit. It's varying a little bit. I think it's maybe you're just not aware of it. But it's not that we can't hear you. And the other guy says somebody else added that your guest is great. He said.
Oh, thank you.
So everybody's happy. So I'll just.
Great. Now is that background noise? Did it go away by any chance?
You know, it stopped for a second a little bit ago, and then it picked up again. And now it's real slow. It's not the same. It's not going fast. It's like it slowed down, and now it's going ka ka ka. But it sounds like
I think the reptilians are listening in, or, you know,
I don't know.
They thought maybe I'd talk about David Icke, and so the reptilians are also tapping the phone. hearing the pulse of their spaceship.
I want to get back to what I think is important, and that is that you have for a long time set yourself up as a leader for whites, and you have tried to do it before, and you've run for president before, and you are running, you're now saying, you're now announcing yourself to be president of the Americans, and you're willing to do it. I do applaud your courage and your bravery to face up to all this and do what you're doing.
No applause, just throw money.
Yeah, I know you want money, but then people will say, John, well, he does this in order to get more donations because he lives off that, and he's doing it like so many others just to make a living because he has no other source of income. You know, these are all things that people do say, will say, and they do say, depending on, you know, how good of friends they are of yours, I guess. But there's a lot that's questionable. In all of this, and I don't know how we get people to, I don't know what kind of leadership we should have, you know, because the idea, like as you're saying, how you're being attacked, if we would actually say, well, so-and-so, John DeNugent is the best leader that we have, and so on, then they will come after you. They will come after anybody who they think is a real threat. And so a lot of people say that we should have a leaderless movement, you know, and even a leaderless revolution, or maybe have all these different groups doing their own thing, which is what we have now.
No, that's not the way the human race works. You know, the human race is a pyramidal life form, like bees and ants and others. We look up to the top of the pyramid for our leaders. We have basically, everybody has different tasks in a modern society. Some of us are soldiers, some of us are chefs, some of us are moms, some of us drive buses, some of us are scientists. A modern society, and some of us are professional leaders because they have vision, they have education, they have courage, they have strong character, they can plan, and they have some sort of inspiring and charismatic qualities, and they have a vision. I'm not talking about managers. Managers are middle level. Leaders are people who can make you feel something and bring out the best in you. Now, let me just, I want to thank you for raising that question you raised earlier. I'll give you my politician startup here. When you mentioned, you know, do I run for president to make money? Now, David Duke, unlike myself, his only job was working for the Defense Intelligence Agency in the early 1970s during the Vietnam War in Laos. I have worked until a few years ago. I have worked every single job imaginable. I have cleaned toilets. I have washed windows.
Why would somebody like you be cleaning toilets?
Because in the 1970s when I was in high school, that was good money.
Oh, well, in high school.
And I was also one of the first steam carpet cleaners with the rug doctor out of California. In when I was in high school, I was making $100 a day in 1970s.
Yeah, but how? High school. I mean,
and
we all.
I've worked in convenience stores. I've been in the Marine Corps. I've also been in the Army National Guard. I spent over 20 years off and on working as a short-term and long-term substitute teacher. I've translated. I've done a huge amount of writing. I have done all kinds of jobs. But I said, you know, I read the Wikipedia article on the ADL, the Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. They have 1,600 full-time employees. Now, the Jews are misers. The Jews are infamously cheap. But the Jews have enough emotional intelligence to understand that the return on investment is incredible when you support a militant group defending the interests of your ethnic group. The Jews understand it's smart to sink money into things like the ADL or AIPAC, their congressional lobby. It was through banding together and supporting militant Jewish leadership that they achieved their greatest coup of all, which is to found the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is the Jews print money and stuff it in each other's pockets. And they bought up the whole country that way.
Well, right.
It pays off to support your leaders.
Well, it's true that whites are notoriously ungiving, and I don't know how that's going to change. And in some cases, they've given to the wrong people, or enough, it doesn't come to anything.
Handicapped kids. You know, we had a little kid who fell into the Pittsburgh Zoo here, fell into a cage full of wild dogs, got mauled to death. And, you know, the whole church was full of people paying their respects and condolences. White people are extremely giving and caring, but they've been taught that that we are an evil race, and they're not convinced that we're a doomed race as well. We're going down, and this election of Obama had a huge effect on people. By the way, Pat Buchanan went ballistic on the G. Gordon Liddy radio show the other day. My goodness, he finally came out of the closet about his racial feelings. Can I read you just a short sentence from him?
Sure.
As you know, this is the former advisor to President Richard Nixon. He was involved in the Watergate burglary and did some time in prison. G. Gordon Liddy. And Pat Buchanan was his guest in his radio show. When asked for his reaction to Obama's victory, Buchanan replied, "White America died last night. Obama's reelection killed it. Our 200-plus year history as a Western nation is over. We're a socialist Latin American country now. Venezuela without the oil." Okay, and then the text says, "Stunned by his clear racism, Liddy tried to walk his guest back from the ledge." With what you just said there, you seem to imply that white people are better than other people. That's not really what you're saying, is it, Pat? And Buchanan replied, he's just blowing all the boats at this point. "Of course that's what I'm saying. Isn't it obvious? Anything worth doing on this earth was done first by white people. Who landed on the moon? White people. Who climbed Mount Everest? White people. Who invented the transistor? White people. Who invented paper? White people. Who discovered algebra? White people. And don't give me all this nonsense about Martin Luther King and civil rights and all that. Who do you think freed the slaves? Abraham Lincoln, a white guy." You know, and so Buchanan, I guess he figures, I'm tired of being on TV and having a column in the newspaper. He just shot his wad, as they say, you know, or phrase going back to the old flintlock rifles. He just figures that's it. He just... A lot of white people.
Well, maybe he figures being on Liddy's show, he's among friends.
Yeah, well, I think most right-wing people do have pro feelings, and most males do. You know, it's one of the things you find all over the world. Males are against race mixing, and women are more open to it because they're compassionate and open and whatnot. And guys are more suspicious of strangers, too.
All right. Well, that's
too macho guys.
But you know, we need to get. We're almost through the first hour, John. And you had said, "Boy, we can say a lot in 2 hours." Well, we never get that much in 2 hours, in spite of the fact it seems like a lot. And I really want to talk about this white leadership business and why what kind of leadership would work, because. You know, is it possible for there to be a white leader? And of course, you say yes, but only, you know, if it's you. Maybe you could, without getting off the track too much, tell us why you think you can lead white people.
It doesn't have to be just me. I'll clone myself, and there'll be three of me. I wish there were about 20 of me or people. No, what I really want is to create a long-term movement where I can hand it off someday to younger people. I'm talking about thinking in terms of centuries and millennia, just like the Jews do. Leadership to me, first of all, I've spent 34 years in this cause. I had the opportunity to commit to my father's multimillion dollar insurance brokerage, Davis Bateman and Nugent. They had the whole the 11th floor of a skyscraper in Providence, Rhode Island. They finally sold in the late 1980s for $4 million. When I graduated from Georgetown, my dad renewed his offer to bring me on board and eventually make me partner in this insurance brokerage. I gave up. And my dad sold out his half for $2 million. It was pretty good change. Gee, that would pay off my Visa card now that I think about it. But I gave that up. I got huge persecution when I was in the Marine Corps Reserve. I was transferred to an all-black supply unit where a Jewish sergeant kept trying to trip me up, get me to say something anti-black so I could be court-martialed. I then switched to the National Guard, where I was Guards Person of the Year in my infantry unit. I graduated with high honors from Georgetown, which is one of the top schools in the country. Phi Beta Kappa, top 10%. I have two beautiful children. I think I speak well. But more than that, I've had a commitment to our race. I've known our cause. I work with Matt Cale in the National Socialist White People's Party. That was my first group, which had been originally founded by the great George Lincoln Rockwell, who was murdered in 11 years before I joined it. Matt Cale, also a former Marine, was running that. Now it's called the New Order. It's up in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Then I worked.
But he doesn't. He doesn't have anything. He's got a website. I mean, I don't mean to be putting him down. You know, I mean, he does what he does, but I mean, he doesn't have any big following. Oh, the point is, how are you going to convince people to see you as a white leader or the white leader or as somebody who should be president of the white Americans or whatever? How, you know, besides running websites. I mean, I'm not attacking you in the least little bit. I'm just pointing out how damn difficult this is. And where is there a way to go at things? I don't think, truthfully, I don't think you can have an answer to that because we have the Jewish media, which is really what prevents us from getting our message out properly.
Well, it does. There are certainly many huge obstacles. The thing to do is to do what I'm doing, and is I and my team go door to door and hand out.
Yeah, 60 seconds for this hour.
Oh, okay. I go door to door. I talk with people. I also have a beer and talk to people. In bars, people really open up, especially here in Pennsylvania. You learn amazing things. Just have a beer and listen to people talk or throw out a conversation trigger, and you'll get people talking. I have just started now.
Well, and would you say then that you're trying to create a local activist group, a local active group, you know, based around yourself?
Only
did
initially.
You do that?
Because the point, I am a legally registered candidate for president of the United States in 2016. Now, there's no way, of course, I can win. The country's less than half white, as I proved in one of my Oral Nation videos, based on the research of the great Virginia Abernethy, professor emerita of population studies at Vanderbilt University. There's a 40 million undercount of the Mexicans in this country.
Okay, well, we're going to our break, John. Let's pick up right there. Thank you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager coming back from our first hour into our second hour now on the Saturday afternoon show. And my guest is John DeNugent. And we're trying to get to the essence of our problem, or maybe our opportunities that we have now, or maybe the difficulties that we're facing. What are the bottom line of all this? And John, you know, you are a kind of a personality, maybe it's all that Irish in you, reach for the stars kind of person, and you can't help but making big plans and seeing the big picture. And because I know that your websites are just great and always have been. And when I go there and read things, I mean, I learn so much and I'm inspired. You're very inspiring. You do a great job. But translating that, there are other websites that people like to go to also. But translating it into some kind of a movement is really tough. And, you know, we used to have some movements that were moving along, but they always managed to put an end to them. When I say they, I mean the powers that be. And I think that that's what we face now, is that if we ever have any success, the Jews are going to shoot it down real good as best they can. And they can, too.
Well, you know, my former assistant, Henry Kalapa, who wrote a piece, he was very angry at me, and he's become sort of a soldier of David Duke. And David Duke and I are sort of big rivals in the white movement. And mm-hmm. he said, you know, I was afraid to start a movement. He thought I was going to start a movement. My concern is this. We have to, first of all, yes, as you say, we have to reach for the stars and dream the great dreams. But we've got to look at the power of the enemy. The roadside is littered with the bodies of white activists who have been destroyed. Henry Ford, who was worth hundreds of millions of dollars, he was the most beloved man in America in the teens in the 1920s. You know, he had the Dearborn Independent. He wrote the book, The International Jew. He gave up by the mid-20s. Patton tried to speak out about the Jews, and then he had his accident. The Ford Foundation, with the money from Henry Ford, now promotes race mixing. So there's so many cases. And Charles Lindbergh, who stood up to the Jews finally, by the way, in a speech of September 11, 1941, ironic also the day that the Pentagon started being built, he finally let loose on the Jews. And, of course, then he was ignored. In fact, his America First Committee renounced him and distanced itself from him because he just barely made the statement, there are three groups trying to get us into World War II. The British government, the Roosevelt administration, and the Jewish lobby. And then all his own supporters in the America First Committee turned on him with a snarl. Oh, most of my best friends are Jews, and we love the Jews, and we denounce Colonel Lindbergh's anti-Semitism. They just abandoned him. So a lot of really good people. And when you're talking about Patton, when you're talking about Charles Lindbergh, you're talking about George Lincoln Rockwell, you're talking about people with charisma, too, and great achievements. And when you're talking about Henry Ford, you're talking about a man who was beloved. He tried to stop World War I by renting an ocean liner full of distinguished Americans, to the peace liner it was called, to go over to Europe. He doubled the wages of his workers so they themselves could afford his Model T cars. These weren't trailer park people. These were some of the most distinguished Americans. Father Coughlin of Irish ancestry, a wonderful speaker. They managed to shut him down. They got the Cardinal of Detroit to order him to shut up. So
we do have their legacy. We do have their works. We do have their words, yes, their speeches, their books, and so on. So we have that, but they themselves, the movement that they were trying to start was shut down. And most people are not going to read these things by these people. You know, there's only some of us who keep it all going and who read it.
Well, let me cut right to the chase here. What's really unique and different about me is I read a quote from Adolf Hitler from the 1920s, and he says the most desirable trait right now to save our people is courage. Basically, what people understand is two of my assistants just came in. Oh, yes, you should be right over there. Thanks. This is a headquarters here as well as a home. And lots of comings and goings here, because we're an active movement now, going door to door and cranking out videos and doing everything. Anyways, catching my train of thought here. Hitler said courage is the most important thing. Now, for the average person, it's a lot easier to be courageous. If you believe, if I have to die for my race and for my people, I'm going to go through the tunnel of light. My soul is immortal. I will be rewarded for having laid my life down for, you know, to use the famous 14 words of David Lane, to ensure a future for white children. It's a lot easier to die if you know just your body is going to die. And it's not a myth. It's not some sort of,
John, I don't think it's about, I don't think it's about courage for the lack of courage in people who are committed to this. I think it's in people not being committed to it, not enough people being committed, not nearly enough. And how do you reach those people who are not now committed and are not interested in it?
I'm so sorry, Carolyn. I've got to step away from the mic for just
one minute,
if you don't mind.
Okay, yeah. I will continue here because I have something to say here.
Okay, I'll be right back. Okay.
Mute your mic. Gosh. Let's see here. I think what I was going to say was, here at the White Network, we say the problem is the Jews. We don't want any Jews. We need to get Jews out of our entire system. And we need to teach people that the problem is a Jewish problem. And that fits in with Henry Ford's work. That fits in with all of these people that John had mentioned previously.
Okay,
they all said the same thing. And so I think this, if we would focus on this, and we have a lot of people in this movement who don't want to focus on this, and I think that shows that's the lack of courage. The lack of courage is being unwilling to face up to the Jews and that it's a Jewish problem that we have. And all the rest is just talk about how we need honor and courage and warriors and so on. What are they going to go to war against? They need to know what they're going to war against, and we don't need all that if we just know that we have to educate our people about the Jews, even though our people are totally indoctrinated that you can't do that, you can't talk against the Jews. It goes back to this German problem. This is what they did. They've done to the Germans, and this is how they beat us out. And this whole thing with anti-Semitism, trying to continue the way they promote, pushing this, that this is a bad thing. We have to stomp out anti-Semitism. Just the opposite. We have to free anti-Semitism. We need to educate people about Jews. And and how, you know, this is where I think there's a lot of difference of opinion among what's called the white movement.
Well, I'm back, of course.
My
analysis, after 34 years of seeing a lot of brave and good people fail, and, you know, William Pierce was in some ways like a father. He wasn't a warm and cuddly kind of guy, warm and fuzzy, but he was like a father figure to me. But he was an atheist. He was a scientist, a Darwinist. When you die, that's it. It's over. Got to grow up, John. Realize when you're dead, it's the end. Your race may go on, but you won't. It's just inky blackness for a billion trillion years. And it's not very comforting. And he had a pseudo-religion called the Cosmotheist Community, but, you know, a religion teaches what happens when you die. I mean, not that you're just dead like a fly. For the average person, and even for people who may be, you know, old souls and more spiritually advanced, it's so much more comforting to believe and to know and sense and intuit and fully grasp and apply in your own life, I have a soul. It's immortal. Every sacrifice I make, and I look at my friend Vincent Renouard over in France, who basically lost contact with his eight kids. His wife dumped him while he was in prison. He has a wonderful new lady friend, by the way. And this is a man who's made incredible sacrifices. He's already been to prison for 10 months. He just got another convocation to go to court over some really almost harmless things he said in a French newspaper. You know, they're trying to bury him in prison, destroy him. He's living from hand to mouth. Why does he believes deeply in God. He knows that no matter what people say against him, and even within our movement, there are nasty people and there are government infiltrators. There's an article came out recently called Confessions of an Israeli Shill about a guy who was paid to disrupt our movement and spread gossip and nasty things. And there's a lot of rotten stuff being said. I mean, there's some people saying I'm a homosexual, other people saying I'm a wife beater. Which is it, guys? You know, stick with
one. You made a very good point here. I'm glad you brought up Vincent Renoir because I did want to have you explain, because you can read the French that he sends out. And you told me that he did send out an email just the other day that I think on the 5th that his trial that was set for the November 6th was now postponed until next March. Because they're bringing some new charges against him. Those?
They want to keep you on a treadmill like a gerbil in a gerbil cage, and they want to keep you just busy. They want to get you to hire lawyers or beg for money for lawyers. You know, there's another comrade, Arthur Topham, up in British Columbia,
yeah,
Canada.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's the same thing. And then you go before some Jew-controlled judge. You know, I mean, I made it.
Well, this is why we need to explain that it's the Jews. It is the Jews. It's the Jews who are behind all of this.
But
even though it appears to be, there's all these bad whites, you know, these bad European types who go along with them and work for the Jews and play the Jews' game. But it's the Jews that are deciding all this. And so here we have Vincent Renoir. Yeah, he's trying to get this work out, and he's so courageous and so brave, and he's so smart, and he works so hard. They're just trying. They probably know that this thing he was coming up for was maybe he was going to get off, maybe. Go ahead.
Let me tell you something else about Vincent Renoir. He ain't no trailer park either. His father was a doctor. He grew up in a small chateau, castle.
They went
every Sunday night, and they had Sunday dinner at a castle in the Loire Valley. I mean, he grew up in luxury. He didn't know hardly any non-whites in France growing up in the 60s. Maybe met an Arab once. This guy grew up in the high bourgeoisie. This is a man entirely impelled by love of his white nation of France, love of all the white race, and the incredible courage as a Frenchman to expose the lie about the supposed SS massacre of the village of Oradour in France in 1944. That's like the number one thing the French are brainwashed on. Oh, the SS massacred the village of Oradour. And he head-on attacked that, and then he lost his cushy job as a respected, very respected and beloved math teacher in his high school where he was teaching. He has an engineering degree, lost all his career. His kids came out and held a demonstration on his behalf. Don't fire our teacher. But he lost that. Then he's got this wonderful 100 pages called In Defense of the Gestapo. That's another thing to make the French pop their cork. You know, now Vincent Renoir is defending the Gestapo, which, you know, broke people's fingers or kicked them in the butt and, you know, made them talk and crushed the French resistance. Mm-hmm. And so
he does. You're right. He keeps working at this. He's got lots of ideas. He's always doing research. And he also early on discovered National Socialism and realized that was a solution to what he saw was the problem of society. Because he was sensitive, and as you say, he's truly a Christian. So now you are going from there into the fact that we need to have we need to have religious beliefs. We need to believe in the immortality of our soul in order to do this kind of work. But there are people who are atheists who are doing this work too.
Well, there are some. I've met some people who are atheists, and they hate blacks and Jews. I would say a high percentage of the people I've met who are hardcore atheists don't have a lot of personal skills. Some of them are not particularly warm and friendly. Hating other races is not white nationalism, folks. White nationalism is building a white nation And a white nation is based on love of your own people. It's based on folklore and traditions and music and song and dance and costumes and glorifying the great heroes and heroines of our race. Every white person around the world should know about Joan of Arc, for example, or Hermann the Carrasker, who saved all of Northern Europe from being enslaved and race mixed by the Roman Empire. We should be, that's what a white nation is. It's not about the Jews, and it ain't about the blacks, and it ain't about the Mexicans or the Turks.
Well, you know, John, I noticed that on your website you have added, and you've done this before, I think, and you're kind of friendly with the blacks. And you seem to be saying that the blacks should get on the side of the whites. And you think that would strengthen us? I mean, what would be the purpose in that, if we would have the blacks on our side, but we would be in order to, but not the mestizos or the Hispanics or not the Asians and not the Native Americans, not anybody else, just the whites and the blacks?
Well, first of all, and I've always, because I've been in politics, I ran for Congress very successfully in 1990. I believe that I won the 1990 Republican primary in the 6th Congressional District of Central Tennessee, in the south and east of Nashville, and there was massive electronic vote fraud, and I have a whole video series talking about my race. And so I follow polls. My father was in politics. He was the Republican nominee for governor of Rhode Island in 1974. My dad was personal friends with Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan. He was invited to serve on the National Security Council along with Colonel Oliver North. He was also offered twice to be the U.S. ambassador to Hungary. I've met Barry Goldwater. I've met all these. I follow polls. I study how the public reacts to things. I listen to people all the time. The highest percentage of anti-Semitism in the U.S. population is African Americans. African Americans are angry at Jews because the Jews are slumlords. The Jews lend them money and foreclose on them. They repossess their cars. And many, many, many blacks understand, because of some excellent publications put up by Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam, black Muslims, that the Jews ran the slave trade that brought the blacks here in the first place. And the Jews not only financed the slave trade, they actually captained the ships and often were the crews of these ships. And when, after the slave trade was banned by both Britain and the United States, when a warship heaved to and demanded to inspect the cargo to see if illegally slaves were on board being brought to America or Jamaica or wherever, these Jew captains just threw all the blacks overboard.
Yeah, John, I know that we're pretty much aware of that, and we do know too. We've heard this many, many times that the blacks hate the Jews, that the Jews have taken advantage of the blacks and so on. But a lot of them still work with them because they help them get the blacks what they want. And there's the black leadership, just like with the Jews, and then there's all these blacks down, you know, ordinary blacks. But would this be, how is this going to help a white movement shouldn't the blacks just be encouraged to do their own anti-Jew thing?
People need leadership. My hand is out to the African-American community with no illusions. I mean, I've read all the books by Philip Rushton, and before that, John Baker of Oxford, the book Race. I know about the IQ differences. Blacks have a higher level of testosterone. They have a much stronger built skull, particularly around the temples. Black people are more physical. They're more natural. You know, some people would say in a negative way, they're more primitive. Black people know what they want. They know what they like. They like music, sex, dancing, fun times with their friends. They're a basic people. If you can convince black people, as I convinced my webmaster for 2 years was black from Los Angeles, Clark Ledbridge.
How black was this? I saw a picture. Well, I mean, he didn't look black to me.
No, but like Colin Powell and Barack Obama, that kind of black. His father was a, Mediterranean looking Egyptian. His mother was a truly black from Eritrea, which is next to Ethiopia. Hmm. So she's full African black. And I asked him once, what skin complexion is your mother? She's black. It's just, you mean dark black? Dark black. But he was, for 2 years, he ran all three of my websites, and he came and volunteered and spent 4 months in my home just where I'd had before the Henry Kalapa. And I didn't have locks. He could have come in and shot me at night. Mm-hmm. I trusted him. He's a
six foot five, too.
He was a great young man. And he didn't have a computer degree, but he learned. And he helped me with Linux, setting up the Linux operating system, did many wonderful things. So my first marriage to an Austrian, I had a black man was my best man at my wedding. So look, there's no race on the other side. Our souls, we don't have a black soul or a white soul or a yellow soul.
Well, you're going to get in trouble with going on like this, John, with people to become a leader of the white people if you're going to talk like that.
There's so much white scum out there. And there are, yes, definitely a few really good black people. I accidentally, without realizing it, I ended up dating two Jewish girls, one of whom had blonde hair and blue eyes. She's Lithuanian, you know, from Northern Europe. And I felt that it would not be correct to continue it. And she told me toward the end after, she says, you know, when my mom passes on, I'm going to inherit $2 million. And that didn't change my decision, but she was one of the nicest women I ever dated. And she was Jewish. Just a little, the nose a little bit of a hook, but I mean, she was cute. She was nice too. And she taught handicapped kids in the public school. She wasn't some greedy Jew into money. And obviously the fact she was dating
me. Do you buy into the idea of the good Jews? Because I think, I was reading about Finkelstein and so on, so that they're, and all that they did to him. So do you buy into that? And maybe you were talking about Gilad Atzmon, or was that somebody else I was looking
at? No, I've talked about him many times. Gilad Atzmon is wonderful. And by the way, of course, you know, his original claim to fame, he's a wonderful saxophonist. And my grandfather, Henry Norman Nugent, was a saxophonist with the Harry James Big Band in the 20s and 30s. It's such a sexy instrument. And Gilad,
it is. Too sexy. It's too sexy.
Know, oh, man. I mean, it's the Barry White of...
It was my favorite music, saxophone music, when I was, you know, like a teenager. And I didn't realize why and what effect it had and so on. And, you know, I mean, later when I read things about saxophone being dangerous, I think Adolf Hitler said things like that, or some of his people did. In the National Socialists, they really went after the saxophone. And by then, I realized why. And they're right.
Well, it was invented by a guy called Adolf Sax.
Face out. Yeah. It was called Adolf Sax.
The inventor was a guy named Adolf Sax. It's called the saxophone. But, sex is part of the mix here. We need more babies. We need more loving. We need.
Yeah, but we need to be careful if we're going to have babies with these black friends of yours and so on.
No.
And the Jews that are so nice. Now, how do how is that going to work? How do you put yourself as the leader of the white people? But you don't want to be totally racial about it. Is that right?
Well, everything is relative. Once you accept the
but once you make paradigm, things relative, I'm sorry, I'm breaking in. But once you make things relative, John, then you open up the gates for everything. And the position that I take and that we started the White Network on is that we have to close those gates if we want to build something and grow. We can't keep them open. That's the whole way it all starts. No.
Ultimately, and this is one reason why I resigned in 1984 from serving Dr. William Pierce, and I spoke at his 1983 convention in Chicago, right after the great Robert Matthews, who founded the Order, talked with him briefly, gave a wonderful speech, by the way. That guy was the real deal. In 1984, I was the MC of his entire convention in Alexandria, Virginia, and I was very close to Dr. Pierce, but I said, something is missing. First of all, The white nationalist movement is 90% guys, and the 10% are women. Some of them are pretty flaky. We don't have a good energy. It's all about the Jews and the blacks and the Turks and the gays and the whatnots. It's not about building. It's not based on love. And, you know, the Christian Bible's Gospel of John, called the most anti-Semitic book in the New Testament by the Jews themselves, says God is love. But he's a tough love kind of God. Ultimately, the way to build a white nation is first... there are many things we need to do, but one of them is we need to be noble and courageous and self-sacrificing, modest and humble.
Self-sacrificing.
Here to serve. We're here to serve our brothers and sisters.
God, now you sound like what the naive super blue-eyed Nordics, you know, well, that's the problem that they have.
I'm going to quote a man named Jesus, and he says, "Be ye wise as serpents, yet innocent as doves." Wise
well,
as serpents.
Pretty hard to do.
But you got to. You got it. And when you're an old soul, if you believe in reincarnation as I do, some of us who have more of the right stuff for leadership, we've had more than one life. We've experienced many things. We have been betrayed in our trust and our idealism before by false leaders and false friends. You, if you really love the white race, it's going to be tough love. You look realistically so that you actually accomplish something. And that is my goal. And so my goal primarily, because I'm trying to think ahead in centuries and in millennia, it could be 1,000 more years we're going to fight these Jews. We need to create a rebirth of Vedanta, the true Aryan religion. Understand, you never die. You literally are not dead for even a tenth of a second. You leave your body. You see your body falling away beneath you. You go through the tunnel of light. And, you know, there are thousands of cases about this. They were all revealed in the 1970s in the book, was it Life After Life by Dr. Raymond Moody?
Yeah,
was an
yeah,
emergency
I read
room
that book.
Physician. Yeah, yeah, it's totally convincing.
No, I believed it. It is totally convincing. But, you know, if we go off on that, you're going to lose the focus on
if people want to get off on, what,
on our fight.
They can get off. I'm going straight ahead, clickety-clack down the track, because I'm saying the reason why people don't do something, even though their heads are full of facts, and if anybody is still in denial that the minorities are taking over after what – after Obama annihilated Romney the other night, it's not about the facts. It is, do you feel, first of all, love for your people and the greatness that we have had for thousands of years? And do you believe that your white ancestors who have passed on before you are now looking at you, particularly if you're a white man, if you're a white male, your primary focus is to defend the women and the children. And create a safe place where our race can survive, and that means women and children protected. If you're not willing to lay your life down, you're not a man, you have two useless testicles between your thighs, and says,
well,
just go suck your thumb in the corner. And
okay.
I'm a second-generation Marine. Men are here to fight. And if you're not willing to fight, then it's because you're a selfish jerk. And why are you a selfish jerk? Because you think, as long as when I lay down to die at the age of 70 or 80 or whenever they come to get me, all the shameless acts of cowardice and irresponsibility and neglect and omitting to help people in need, it'll be okay. I will have absconded and escaped punishment. There's no God. There's no angels. There's no afterlife. There's no karma. I will die, and then my troubles will be over. How wrong that is. How very wrong that is.
Well, maybe you should become, as so many of our white leaders are, maybe you should become a spiritual leader, John.
Well, both.
Because that is, you know, you're very passionate about that. And I just think that we've got too many white leaders who want to be their pastors. They are actually pastors and ministers and so on. Or they want to be like David Duke. You know, they're carried away with that. They love to preach and to give sermons and so on, and get very. And I understand that. I've been there. I like that too. You know, I'm moved by that kind of thing. But I don't think then that we get anything accomplished.
Let me tell you something.
I want to ask you about Carol Covington before we get too much.
Okay. Well, let me tell you something. Okay. I was. my good buddy Plato. Ever heard of Plato? Plato,
yeah.
He's one of them ancient Greek, you know, Grecians, as George Bush would say. He's one of the ancient Grecians, Plato. But Plato actually said something very important. I never forgot it. He said, the world shall never be healed until philosophers become kings, mm-hmm. or kings become philosophers. And that is my aspiration. That's my personal goal, to be both a philosopher and a man of sons of the greater in spiritual issues, but also be a king willing to wage war and execute traitors, punish the wicked, and create a practical society, economy, jobs, good schools, safe streets, and healthy food, air, and water. It says you have to be a philosopher and a king. If we don't get a leader who's both.
Well, John, I think you are. I think you are that. You know, I think that's your nature. I think that's why the people who really like you and like to, you know, follow, read what you do and so on, they like that too. I think that we feel that. But I don't know that it's going to, it's what, I think, as I said, I think you're kind of reaching for the stars. You have a grand and glorious vision. I want to, let's just right here take this moment to, I found on your website, and this was from 2010, 2 years ago, and then what you were commenting on, one part of it was from 2 years before that, but you said that, I'll just read it so it'll probably be better. Somebody wrote to you in 2010 and said, Mr. DeNugent, what is your opinion on the Northwest Front? Do you believe that this organization would be dependable in the violent future? And is the Northwest USA a good place to build a specific base and homeland? And you replied, well, there are some brilliant and idealistic people associated with the Pacific Northwest concept, among them Harold Covington, who is also a very gifted and incisive writer with many decades of service to our cause, and it could work. But then you go on to say that you don't like that area very much because it's so liberal, and you like the area that you're in now, you know, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, mm-hmm. West Virginia, and so on. It's better.
In Ohio.
Yeah, in Ohio. And yeah. And I there is that is it is super liberal up there. They just have these little enclaves. But the fact is, you know, that Harold Covington was working with Frank Cohen, the Jew, for quite a long time. And then he and since, you know, he is guilty of doing all kinds of dirty tricks and writing writing emails all over the place, posting.
No.
He does it on the white network. Using other people's names and so on. Or if it's not him, it's one of his people doing it. So what do you say today about the Northwest, Pacific Northwest concept?
Yeah, I've been in the cause for 34 years. One of the things Willis Cardo, who was my boss at the Barnes Review and American Free Press, and he's been a publisher for 50 years, he says, John, what is the most important traits for a leader is experience. You've got to have experience. I've had experience with Harold Covington. He's a wonderful writer. He's eloquent. I've heard a lot of people criticize him for some of the things that you've mentioned. He and I have never had friction. Other people have had a lot of friction with him, and there are other people who criticize me too. I'll say this. I've been out to the Pacific Northwest many times. Oh, God, is it beautiful out there. The mountains and the beach and the rocks along the beach. It used to be a lot of beautiful Scandinavians out there as well, a lot of good German-Americans and British stock. And 30, 40, 50 years ago, yeah, when they first were promoting this idea, and, you know, Robert Matthews and his order people, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and Robin Banks out in that area, Northern California, it made a lot of sense back then. That area is full of Mexicans today. It's full of Chinese. It's full of homos. It's full of Jews. You know, the area is inundated with third worlders today. Wake up and smell the coffee. And the white people there are the most liberal. Furthermore, Evergreen, which is the CIA company which is spraying all these chemtrails, they're headquartered out there. One of the nastiest people on the planet Earth, Bill Gates, Microsoft is out there. You know, just so much New World Order stuff. Plus, if you believe in UFOs, you know, and stuff about the cigar-shaped spaceships, that's all you see out there. They're supposedly, you know, the evil, even the aliens out there are evil. So, I mean, it's just hostile. Now, there's good people out there. There's wonderful people out there. And you can fall in love with the mountains. But what I'm talking about giving up all the areas the white race owns. What I saw is the Jews created a homeland for themselves, or a headquarters in Israel. The Mormons created a headquarters for themselves first, as the first step, in Utah, a base, a bastion, and then expanded outward from a strong core. For me, the strong core is the very right wing, heavily armed, overwhelmingly white four states. The western two-thirds of Pennsylvania, the entire state of West Virginia, which would overwhelm against Obama, by the way, Ohio, in Kentucky, which is like 97% white. And I'm talking white people with guns and, you know, Scotch, Irish, and German. Those are your founding stocks of all these mountain areas. Tough.
Yeah, because you say in this article and when this thing on your blog, like that was you wrote just 2 years ago, that Scandinavians are liberal wherever they settle. You say there are a lot of Scandinavians out there. I didn't know Scandinavians went to the Northwest.
Oh, sure.
And you say Nordic whites can be hyper-individualistic, hyper-altruistic, and totally naive. And this was a trait that worked well in the Ice Age, yeah, but not so much now, and that's why you think that it's better where you are.
Well, the German-Americans were there. I mean, I look very German, although I'm only a 16th German. Maybe I was a crowd in my previous life. But, you know, they've got that sort of Kleenex box-shaped face, you know. They've got that square jaw. And that German blood is very, very useful. And you've got – then when you've got your Irish and your Scotch-Irish, you've got fighters. They'll fight at the drop of a hat, you know. I mean,
they're too much fighters.
You know,
they just want to fight over anything. They're not the best.
So mix the Irish and the German, then you got the perfect.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and you know, the Irish have always liked the Germans. They've always stood up for the Germans, at least you know, in the 20th century. They're a good combination, I think.
One of the songs in World War I, when the Irish the Easter Uprising, was "Ireland shall ne'er be free unless set free by Germany."
Yeah.
You know, so the Irish and the Germans both understood that the Jew-controlled British Empire was the common enemy. You know, I have a friend named Bob. He's pure Irish, and he's gone over to Ireland many times, and he says one of the jokes is there, a guy walks into a saloon, and chairs are flying, and fists are crunching jaws, and he taps another guy who's standing there on the shoulder and says, "Excuse me, is this a private brawl, or can anybody join in?"
Yeah,
that's the Irish spirit. That's the Scottish spirit. That's the Welsh spirit. This is a spirit of enjoying the fight. And that's better in some ways because
we don't have much
for permission to fight.
I'm sorry. We don't have much time, and I want to talk a little bit about Golden Dawn, and I also want to talk about chemtrails, which we haven't gotten to. So real quickly, since it fits in here, we're talking about the Nordics and so on and the blue-eyed naive people. Now, Golden Dawn, you know, the Greeks – they're the Mediterraneans. They're the darker, and they probably have some blue eyes too, but they have dark eyes too. And they're doing a great job. They're not so naive, maybe. They're a different type of people. I don't admire them more than the Germans and the Nordics, but when it comes to being practical and being able to stand up and say things that aren't popular and so on, they're a lot better at it. At least this group is doing very well. So as I said earlier, maybe we should put the Mediterraneans in charge of, and the rest of us follow them. What do you think?
Well, I completely agree with you, Carolyn. And in fact, I had a blog a couple of years ago. There was a huge race riot by the southern Italians, you know, the Sicilians, against a bunch of blacks who were taking over their town, so black refugees from Africa, taking over the town, terrorizing the Italian women on the street, and wolf whistling and leering and pawing and, you know, just intimidating women and children. And, you know, being Italians, they just went ballistic. They started pounding the stuffing out of them. And I like that about Mediterranean branch of the white race. They'll fly off the handle when they should be flying off the handle. You know, these chilly blonde blue-eyed people,
yeah,
they wait for permission.
You have to be hard-headed. Yeah, you have to be hard-headed. You have to be able to say, "We don't want you," and not say, "Oh, that isn't nice. You can't do that."
Greece has
this latest article I read, Greece has 5,000 Jews, it says. These Jews are they're trying to get help to do something about Golden Dawn, because Golden Dawn keeps getting more popular. And it says there's Greece has 5,000 Jews. If there's only 5,000 Jews in Greece, they ought to get them. They ought to send them out of there. They ought not have any Jews in Greece. Why have this tiny little minority causing trouble and acting, you know, like it wants to tell everybody else what to do all the time?
Yeah, and the 5,000 Jews own all 5,000 banks and TV stations.
Yeah, probably.
That's a problem.
So how do you get rid of them? You're right. You're right. Well, okay. Let's go on to the chemtrails and how you think I believe in I see chemtrails. I've been seeing them for years around here where I live, and I know they're unnatural, and I've read about them, and I know that there's something terribly wrong about all that. But there are still so many people who think that this is some kind of conspiracy craziness, and you can't get it through to them to pay attention to what chemtrails really are. And you have talked about it quite a bit, and you have also think that this is having such an effect on white people, making them apathetic and numb, and that's part of the reason why we can't get white people to stand up and do something about their situation.
Yeah, I came to the conclusion a long time ago that there's a tripod of death affecting us. First of all, in the protocols of the Elders of Zion, specifically say, teach the Gentiles to be atheists. You got one life, you're an animal, so get all the pleasure, make all the money, get all the sex, drive the fancy cars, buy the nice threads. You know, you got one life, so enjoy it, Buster. And if you have to...
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
No, I like what you're saying. I think that is very damaging to us.
So the first thing is, you want people to believe we are just intelligent animals that walk upright on two legs. We're hairless monkeys, basically. And just like, you know, like some of these monkeys, they have sex four times a day. What's the bonobo or something? In other words, think about your animal desires. You know, the lower chakras, as they say, the lower needs, not the higher needs. You want a dumbed down slave planet. Okay, the second thing is brainwash people full of false history and lies so they don't realize what a glorious past we as Aryans have, the heroes and inventions and the beauty, the cathedrals, the symphonies, the space program, everything that we've done and that has helped the rest of the world too. All the other races have been helped by us. He says, denigrate all that so people have no history. And the third thing is, this is the third part of the tripod. It is that they have been working on a neurochemical level to make people anxious, depressed, and even suicidal. One part of this is chemtrails. They ain't spraying 14 million tons of aluminum, strontium, arsenic, and barium for nothing into the skies. It's because everybody's known since the 1970s that aluminum makes people have Alzheimer's. They say don't cook out of, you know, aluminum cooking pots.
That's right. That's
They're spraying 14 million tons of it into our lungs. Where do you think it's coming down into? It's coming right into your nostrils. It's going into your lungs. It's going into your nervous system. And it's not affecting me. You can tell I'm as hot-headed as an Irishman as ever was. And you're fire and flames for the cause, too. Most of the people listening to this radio show today, they are still capable of feeling anger. But a lot of people are affected by it. The chemtrail. The second thing is fluoride in the drinking water. By the way, it's a byproduct of the aluminum industry from Alcoa, just up the river here in New Kensington. It's a lot of fluoride is produced as a byproduct of smelting metal. Let's make money off it. The New World Order people said, hey, I know the side effect of fluoride. It makes people apathetic and docile. It's a tranquilizer. So they dump that in the drinking water from more than half the United States as a tranquilizer in the drinking water. So you know, in the old days, I tell you, if you saw a black guy walking with a white chick, it'd be a mob would form. You know, and that black man better run. That black man better run. Better not even talk to somebody's daughter. It'd be it. And the cops would beat the pulp out of him, too. And he'd be thrown right out of that whole neighborhood.
Well, I think the media is also a big player in that. And you can even think of the media as a neurochemical or as a drug, because it does affect our thinking. And television, there are theories that television, just that the nature of television causes us to go into kind of a trance, and we take in a lot of that stuff without. And then they have subliminal messages. And we're taking it in without any kind of critical judgment going on. So, you know, I think this is just as dangerous. And then there's aspartame is another chemical that they brought in, making money off of some junk that, you know,
if I may go back to the TV thing, Marshall McLuhan is the first scientist really studying the physical effects of TV watching, said that the dots on the TV screen. They suck you in. You want to fill in the black holes between the dots of color and black and white. It sucks you in. You watch, especially kids, watching TV. I'm not talking about movies in a big smooth screen. I'm talking about regular TV with those dots, those little dot matrix dots, those pixels. It says literally they go slack-jawed, and their jaw drops, and they look like a hypnotized patient. They stare at it, and you can see a hypnotic effect. And all kinds of stuff is being passed into their wide-open subconscious mind the entire time a child is watching TV. Cell phones are affecting people. Henry Kolob just spent 2 hours every day on the cell phone. Cell phones are causing brain cancer. It's a fact. Ericsson, Nokia, and the World Health Organization have all stated as a fact constant cell phone use causes brain cancer. And my insurance agent, his wife also worked in insurance for a huge company called Eon, and she told him and he told me that stockbrokers who get brain cancer are being paid under the table hush money when they get brain cancer. Don't talk about it. Don't go to court, because we know the studies are out there. We know that Verizon and AT&T and Cricket and all these companies, they have the facts that the constant cell phone use fries people's brains and it causes brain cancer. So, and also it tells the government exactly where you are at every second, because there's a GPS device in every cell phone. Another thing affecting people think, oh, I'm doing such a big favor for my health by drinking bottled water. But in the plastic bottle is a an artificial chemical form of female hormone, chemical version of estrogen called bisphenol A. Yeah. And the more bottled water you drink, the more you as a man are getting female hormones.
And remember how they managed to push bottled water. I mean, I can remember that, although I don't remember the details. It was just like more and more people were drinking bottled water, and it was just the thing and the fad and so on. And if you wanted to be like the Europeans, you'd order bottled water in the restaurant and blah, 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 blah. They get us to do all well. They get us onto cell phones. They get us onto everything because through their control over all our communications.
Exactly.
So that's where you have to start. I mean, if we're really serious, if we want to talk about, it's not a problem. Maybe it's not. We don't need to worry about who's going to be the leader. Or I'm not saying you don't do great leadership, but or who how to do all this. We need to get people. We need to make it, and maybe not even just the Jews. So the Jews are behind it. But we need to convince people to get off of this stuff. You know, Henry Ford and the Independent Jew, they were talking about, and it's in the protocols, that they were going to get the Gentiles hooked on luxuries. You know, a lot of these luxuries, what they meant by that was just the stuff that they convinced us to use.
Expensive luxuries. You know, if you go to a Steelers game, Pittsburgh Steelers game, you can spend a couple $100. You know, you got to work like a slave for your, quote, luxury. You know, the French have a proverb, a guilty pleasure is no pleasure at all. I don't believe in any pleasure where I feel rotten about how much I slaved and worked and squandered money. You know, I mean, people spend $50,000-$60,000 for a Mercedes or a Cadillac Escalade. Yeah, but then you got to work huge hours. You could be home with your wife and your kids, tossing the football with one of your children.
Yeah, but see, people don't want to do that anymore. People get hooked. See, we can talk about all the great pastimes, things we can do for free, but people get hooked on these kinds of, well, I'll call them luxuries. They're not what we think of as actual luxuries. They're just things like television and video games and cell phones and tech, all this high tech stuff, and which all has a bad effect on us, you know. And this is what it takes tremendous, I guess. I mean, it's not hard for me, but if I were young now, it might be different. I can't say, although I never got caught into too much. But you know, it takes tremendous will for people to drop out of this stuff. They're addicted to everything.
Well, they are. I mean, I have a friend who's about 22 and he weighs 400 pounds. And he told me a couple months ago that his hip has stress fractures in a couple places because he's too much weight in his hips.
I'm such an uncompassionate person, I guess, that if somebody weighed 400 pounds, I couldn't be their friend. You know, I just, you know, see, I can't, I, 400, are you just exaggerating?
No,
I mean,
no,
400 pounds is huge. And anybody that lets themselves get to 400 pounds, I already have just disgust for that person.
Well, I tell you, the thing is, there's a wonderful book about willpower, which I've been promoting on my blog. It points out when people are miserable, they stuff themselves with comfort food. We need to stop these pseudo therapies of boozing, sexing, overspending, and overeating. And basically, I am optimistic that we will save 10% of the white race, and from the sound kernel, we will rebuild our people. I believe the white race has undergone many catastrophes in the past. The fall of the Roman Empire is a catastrophe. The white population dropped by, some say, 50%, some say two-thirds. Most of the white people in the world lived in the Roman Empire. When it collapsed, the roads, the bridges, schools, safety. You couldn't even walk through the woods because there were highwaymen out in the woods who slit your throat for what little was in your purse. So the population collapsed. The white race has been through many catastrophes. And if you believe, you know, the many, many stories which Plato certainly believed in, the great Greek philosopher of Atlantis, that says there was a high-tech white civilization. It became wicked and greedy, and it collapsed. There was a tremendous war. And we went right back to the Stone Age. So the white race has bounced back many times.
Yeah, but bouncing back, you make it sound easy. What we went through was horrendous, and how long it takes to get back again. So to take it, you know, to say, well, we'll just let ourselves, you know, die out here, and then we'll somehow bounce back with this little remnant over how much period of time? I don't know. But anyway, I'm going to be quiet now, John, and I'm going to let you use the rest of the time. We've got 6 minutes. Or so to give us your you know, continue with what you're saying, or to give us your outlook and your idea of what you want to accomplish and what you hope for.
Okay. Well, first of all, let me say thank you very much for having me on your show. And I would like to ask now if people want to hear the recorded version of the show, this is on the archives.
If they just go to thewhitenetwork.com. They'll find it right on the slider on the front page, and also under recent shows or whatever recent programs. It'll be there. They click on there, and there'll be a player to play it. Well, it'll take me about an hour to get that up, and they can download it. Yeah.
Wonderful. Okay, what I believe, thanks for that information, because I have a lot of people viewing my website right now. I can tell by a site. Visitor statistics software I have on my websites. A lot of people are listening right now, and I hope a lot more, because I really promoted this show on my own blog, and I have special software to send out mass emails. I did a big mass email for our show together.
Well, I can send you the MP3, John.
Oh, wonderful.
It's available, and you can send it out all you want. Post it
wherever
you want.
By the way, MP3 is a German invention.
Yeah.
I just thought I would source that in. But what I believe is that the Aryan race is eternal. We have been around for tens of thousands of years. We've built great civilizations. Today, we are clearly heading straight into a veil of tears and destruction. There is no way we can avoid the catastrophes ahead. The most important thing is to save yourself. As Jesus Christ said, what does it avail a man if he saves all his things and loses his soul? You will face the consequences in life and in death, for whether you are a despicable, irresponsible, and negligent coward and a miser, or whether you helped your brothers and sisters in need and you supported good leaders and you took your place in a fighting organization. Our race has the ability, as Hitler pointed out in Mein Kampf, we have two tremendous advantages over the Jew. One, we're creative. We're innovative. We have invented everything you see today. And the second thing is, we are naturally altruistic, from the Latin word alter, as an alternative, which means the other thing, the other person. We naturally are responsible. We have the ability to stick together, not like a herd of lemmings or cattle or bees, worker bees. No, we have the instinct to make a conscious choice to do the right thing and to feel and express love in practical ways for our folk that is today in such terrible need. My goal is first and foremost to tell people, you are a child of God. Your soul is eternal. You won't be dead for a tenth of a second when your physical body has had enough. You go through the tunnel of light. You will see your loved ones. You will see some of the great heroes of the past, and you will be judged by how you led your life. That's the most important message. And then how do we show love? Right? In the practical world, creating a political, racial, and religious organization. And I use the word religious from the Latin word religare, related to the word ligament, related to the word link. It's fine to be spiritual and metaphysical and entertain thoughts about, is there life after death? Is there reincarnation? What happens when I die? No, but a religion brings people together into a house of worship for common rituals, meeting other people. Young men can meet young women in a fine place of worship and meet people who want to found a family and raise children with good values. We need religion, not just theories about God. And that is my goal. And I need people to support me financially. I need people to join my movement, contact me, and we will grow together. And I will hand off this movement to the next generation of fighters.
Well, what religion would you be? Would you kind of a religion that you've sort of put together yourself, or basically Christianity, or what?
Vedanta is the original Aryan religion, died out in many parts of the world. The Brahmins of India aren't gods with 12 arms and legs or elephant and monkey gods. It is a belief in reincarnation. It's a belief that we move up to the animal stage, to the human stage. We have many lives. Then we go to other worlds between our human lives. This is Vedanta. It's the original Aryan religion. Jesus is a very important person to me also. I believe he was deeply enlightened soul, and in many ways I do have strong Jew-free but completely Christian convictions and values. I believe Jesus was a great, great messenger sent by God also.
Well, that's fantastic, John. I want to thank you so much for being on the program tonight, and I want to apologize for the times that I interrupted you. I didn't want us to get off and not, you know, cover a lot of the things that that I know were important, so I hope you forgive me for that, and the listeners, too.
I love your show. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, John, and we'll do it again. Thank you, listeners. This is Carolyn Yeager at the White Network. Good day.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.